Good morning. Today's Daf in Rosh Hashanah is Chav Gimel. We are starting on the Mishnah on Chav Beis Amud Beis and continuing within our discussion of Kiddush HaChodesh. So here at the end of the first parak, and yesterday we began the second parak, so we are discussing and detailing exactly the process of Kiddush HaChodesh. There's a mitzvah upon Beis Din to sanctify the new month. We've been discussing this extensively really since the beginning of the Masechta, but focusing specifically on the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh towards the end of the first parak. And now here in the second parak, that's all we're going to be discussing. So the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, so there are two parts to the mitzvah. Well, the first part of the mitzvah, which is the actual mitzvah itself, is for Beis Din to be Mekadosh. How the Mekadosh al pi ha-re'iyah. Two witnesses come to Beis Din testifying that they saw the new moon, and upon receiving and accepting these witnesses, so Beis Din is going to then formally be Mekadosh HaChodesh. As we've discussed already numerous times, so there are 2 days in which could potentially become Rosh Chodesh. It's either going to be the 30th or 31st day of the previous month, and depending on when the witnesses come in and actually testify to the seeing of the new moon, so then that's when Beis Din is going to be Mekadosh. The second component is going to be now the dissemination of this information. In other words, now Beis Din has been Mekadosh the Chodesh, so now Beis Din is also going to be responsible for sending out Shlichim to let everybody know exactly when the Rosh Chodesh was declared. Already a number of times, so I've quipped that Bizmanenu. So we don't have a Beis Din, but if we did have a Beis Din and they were Mekadosh HaChodesh, so then what everyone would do is that everyone would just simply receive a text from the Beis Din or whatever means of communication they're going to use nowadays, and then everyone's going to know exactly when Rosh Chodesh is. So we live in a world of communication, and right, it's a different world that we live in. So for us, it's no problem. Back in the time, in terms of disseminating this information, so it's a real challenge. In other words, without electricity, so how is that information sent out? So they would send out shlichim on foot or even by horse. But the amount of time that was given between the actual Rosh Chodesh and the 2 months where this information becomes necessary within 2 weeks' time is going to be Nisan and Tishrei. Because there you have Yontif coming up on the 15th day of the month for both Nisan and Tishrei. In Tishrei, you have Yontif coming up on the 10th day of the month. Okay, that makes it even a bigger challenge. But still, so you have that information, that precious information that's needed within 2 weeks' time. So sometimes there are some provinces where they're just simply too far away. If you recall, just chazering over Gemara that we did a couple days ago, so there is more travel time afforded in Nisan than in Tishrei. Okay, because in Tishrei, so the shlichim can't travel on Rosh Hashanah itself. They can't travel on Yom Kippur itself. And if there's a Shabbos, there's going to be a Shabbos. If there are two Shabbosim, so there could be 4 days of Tishrei that they won't be able to travel. Okay, that cuts down on the travel time. In Nisan, however, the only thing that's impeding the traveling of the shlichim is only going to be Shabbos. So the shlichim have just simply more travel time in Nisan than in Tishrei. You remember we discussed communities that were just like right in the middle, meaning that were within Shlichim's reach for Nisan, but not Shlichim's reach for Tishrei. And should they be observing a 2 day Yontif or 1 day Yontif, right? And remember, Rav Yochanan had a gzera that if they're not receiving the Shlichim for both occasions, so they should be observing a 2 day Yontif. Okay. Anyway, whatever. Just chazering of what we did. Okay. So. We're going to start off this morning on Chav Beis Amud Beis with the Mishnah towards the bottom of the Amud, and we're going to be talking about their version of high-speed internet. Okay, so how do you get this information across a large landmass over a short period of time? So the answer is that back in the day, so they did have high-speed internet. Now the internet went down, as we're going to be discussing over the course of this morning, but they had it. Okay, so I just did a little bit of research this morning. In terms of the distance between Yerushalayim and let's say the diaspora, right? Back in the day, they lived in Bavel. So how far are we talking about? So from Jerusalem to let's say Fallujah, right? Fallujah nowadays probably is what Pumpedisa was back in the good old days. So it's 999 kilometers. 8 days to travel by foot. Okay, Google Maps is my source. Okay, good. So, that's some distance. However, as we're going to be learning now in our Mishnah, so you could cover a large mass of land in a short amount of time. How can you do so? So, let's see. So, our Mishnah inside. So, Birishona, originally, so what they would do is they would light torches, and from one mountaintop to another mountaintop. It's fantastic. It's a great way to send a message across a large massive land. So Mishakilkul HaKusim, however, what happened was that the Kusim got involved and they were Makalkul. They ruined it. In other words, what they did is that they lit fires when it was not Rosh Chodesh. And so although we had just such a great way of communicating, but unfortunately, the Kusim got involved. So Hitkinashu Shulchim Yotzim. So what they would then do is they would then move to the Shulchim. They would send people on foot and on foot and on horseback in order to get that information out there. So Ketayu Masim Asu. So even though now the Mishnah has already admitted that this is no longer a method that was used, it's a defunct method. But nevertheless, the Mishnah over here is going to give us some more details regarding this method of how they would light torches. So Masin, so I'm sorry, Ketayu Masim Asu. Mevi include so shall Erez Aruchim. So they would take these long cedar branches, v'kanim v'atzei shemen, wood of the olive tree, u'na'ur shal pishtan and flax, and basically a wood that was very flammable. V'karech b'mishicha, and they would wrap it up and they would with oil. V'ola l'rosh ahar, and they would go to the mountaintop. U'matzis b'hen, yesor, and they would light it over there. U'molech u'mevi, malo morid. And they would wave it in different directions. Now this is the exact same language we use in terms of the waving of the dalaminim. They would go back and forth and up and down. Now over here, so there was no mitzvah per se over here, as opposed to the lulav where you have nanunim. Nanunim, it's an actual mitzvah to wave it in all directions. But over here, there's no mitzvah per se. So Tosos over here quotes the Yerushalmi. You can see the second to last Tosos on our Amud, B'Yerushalmi, Mashma Kadesh, Lo Yitu Lamashu Kochav. In other words, if all we did it was just wave it in one direction, so from a distance, what does it look like? It looks like a shooting star. So that's not what we want to communicate, that this is a specific message of Kiddush HaChodesh. So we're going to be waving it now in a up, down, back, forth motion so that the person who's looking at it from a distance understands, oh yeah, this is a message. This is a communication. Achihu, back to the Mishnah. Achihu was chaver shu osa kein b'rosh ahar asheni. And now the person on the next mountaintop over, so he's going to see the waving of the fire. And now he knows it's time for me to wave the fire. Okay, good. And we're going to be talking a little bit later on this morning about the distance between one mountaintop and another mountaintop. So eight parsos, I hope I'm saying it correctly. We'll give a number later on this morning. So yeah, okay, good. I got it right. So eight parsos between the mountaintops. So, okay, and we'll go over the actual distance. So, v'chein b'rosh ahar ha-shlishi. And the same thing now with the third mountaintop. Me'en hayu masu masuos. Now, which mountaintops did they choose? So, this would be very helpful if I could help identify what these mountains are. So, I'm not in a position to help you with where these mountains are. Look, I know, right? I looked it up this morning, right? There's a path to get from Yerushalayim to Punta Dissa. And the reason why I keep saying Punta Dissa, you'll see it later on. Anyway, so, but whatever. I can't help you with the actual identity of these mountains. So, Mehar Mishcha le Sartava, or Mehar Tava le Grufina. So there are five mountaintops that are identified over here in this Mishnah, right? Does he give a picture? Does he give a topography? Yeah, he does. Okay, good. All right. So see the Karin Gemara for more on the topography of these mountains. So Lo Zaza Misham Ela Molech Umevi Malo Morid. So now when you get to the fifth mountaintop, so Lo Zaza Misham, they didn't move from there, meaning that was it. That was the end, but obviously you need to make the jump to Bavel. So what you would do, and the fifth mountaintop is once again you would wave the fire up, down, back, forth. Ashiro kol agol lafanav kemedur seish. And now Punta Dissa would be blazing in fire. What does that mean? So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain what that means a little bit better. Okay, but meanwhile, okay. So this is their high speed internet. This is their communication, and it was fantastic. Meaning it was a great way of disseminating information across a large mass of land, and you did so almost instantaneously, right? You were able to cover hundreds and hundreds of miles in a short amount of time. Unfortunately, the Kusim got involved, and unfortunately, we no longer were able to use this method of communication. Okay, so what we're going to be doing this morning is a little bit more talking about this method of communication, despite the fact that it's defunct. I mean, the Mishnah just did that. Right, the Mishnah gave us some details, even though the Mishnah acknowledged that we no longer do it. I suppose why would the Mishnah give us all these details if it's no longer in use? So I would imagine that the Mishnah is just basically laying down the plan in that if in fact we're able to put it back up again, so then the Mishnah just gave us a flight path, if you will, in terms of how to do it. Okay, Anyway, so my mashma de mathin lishna de yikudu. Okay, so the Mishnah talks about lighting fires. The Mishnah uses a strange word, a strange choice of word. The Mishnah says, Berishona hayu masin masuos. Now, if this is the first time you sing the Mishnah, so you would not have translated the word masin masuos as lighting fire. Okay, so the Gemara wants to know, how did I know that? How do we know that? So the Gemara says, well, if you're familiar with Navi and you're familiar with Targum, okay, that's a lot of things that we're not familiar with, but if you're familiar with both, so the Gemara says, so then you would know. So Vayisaim David Vanashav. So you read a pasuk in Navi in Shmuel Beis and in Metargaminan, and then you read Targum in that pasuk and Va'ogdinan David, and he lit up. Okay, good. So Tana Rabbanan Ein Masin Masuos Ella Al Ha Chodesh Anir Bezman LeKacho Ve'Ein Masayim Masin LeOr Iburo. Okay, so now this little bit of Gemara over here is, I'll say it's complicated, but in other words, it's not. In other words, when you think about it, and I'm going to go through this Gemara really too quickly, but when you think about it, so here now we need a method of communicating, and we only have one move. This is kind of like, if you will, it's kind of like Morse code. In other words, by Morse code, so what do you have? So you have a dot and you have a dash. And now with those, so those are two methods of communication. So by putting together dots and dashes, so you're able to create a whole language. Okay, all right. I don't know Morse code, but you understand. Over here, it's not even two moves. It's just one move, and that's lighting a fire and waving it. So how do I know now, as I send that information across a large gap of land? So how do I know which night we were Mekadesh HaChodesh? Now the simplest answer would be, well, look, it could only be one of 2 days. It's either going to be day 30 or day 31 of the previous month. Okay, so whatever day it is, so just go and wave your fire the night subsequent. I'd love to say it's that easy. It's not that easy. Why? Because as we all know, one of the possibilities of Rosh Chodesh may end up also concurring together with Friday night. In other words, it could be that Beis Din was Mekadesh Friday, and then obviously the night following is going to be Friday night. You can't light the fires on Friday night. Now remember, we've said this already numerous times, but let's repeat. You can be Mechal Shabbos to be Mekadesh the Chodesh, but you cannot be Mechal Shabbos in order to disseminate the information. That does not override the Shabbos. So now we're going to get stuck. Meaning, if what we're going to do now is all we're going to do is light a fire and wave it, and let's say Friday was the 30th day, so now what? So now we get stuck. So you can't light the fire on Friday night. So what are you going to do? Light the fire now on Motzei Shabbos? Well, that is only but confusing, because now how are people going to interpret the lighting of the fire that it was that Friday was Rosh Chodesh and not Shabbos being Rosh Chodesh? Ah. So now we all understand the problem. The problem is that how are we going to properly communicate this information to people out there, out in the diaspora, when all we have is just but one maneuver, and that is to light a fire? That's the question. And the Gemara first quotes the Braisa. We read the Braisa. And the Braisa says that we're only lighting fire for the post, for the night following the 30th, meaning to say that if Beis Din was Mekadesh the 30th day, which means that the previous month was a chaser, not a malay, so then the night after the 30th now turning into Rosh Chodesh, then they would light fire. However, if Beis Din was Me'aber the previous month was 30 days, so the 31st day now becomes Rosh Chodesh, so Beis Din would not light the fire. And now, in using this on-off method, so now everybody would know. In other words, this is a good way to communicate which day was Rosh Chodesh. So on the night following the 30th, if we saw fire, good. So that means that Beis Din was Mekadesh the previous month on the 30th day. If, however, we saw no fire, so now we know. Beis Din was not Mekadesh the 30th day, but rather they were Mekadesh the 31st day. Okay. That's right now what we have over there. That's what we just learned together in the Braisa. And the Gemara now wants to go over, why is it this possibility? There are other permutations. There are other ways we could have done it. So that's what the Gemara is going to discuss. L'memer da'achasar avdina amala lo avdina. Okay, good. So the Gemara now walks away from the Braisa exactly how we concluded, that we're only lighting fires after the chaser, but not after the malay. So my time, Amar Rabbi Zerik, Zerik Mishum, Rosh Chodesh Chaser, Shechal Yos Be'er Shabbos. So as exactly as we described, because what happens now is that what happens if a chaser were to occur on a Friday, meaning the 30th day falls on a Friday. So Amos Avde Bafuke Shabbos. So the only time you can light is on Motzei Shabbos. And Diyamar Navi Nami Amalei Asu Lemite. Now, if we were lighting fires on both nights, so then everyone will be understandably really confused, because now, if we were lighting on the night after the 30th and the night after the 31st, and the night of the 30th, it was a Friday, so the Friday night, so now when we light fires on Motzei Shabbos, so everyone's going to be like, which day was based in Mekadesh? So hi chaser, I'm sorry, limit it, Amrei, because people would then say, as we are now on the top of Chof Gimel Amin Aleph, hi chaser huva, I do love mes, mamishum de lo efsher. So maybe Friday was the day that the basin was Mekadosh. I didn't light Friday night. They can't light Friday night. And Odom Amalei Hayav is Mano Avdom. Or it could very well be that Shabbos was Rosh Chodesh, and the fire that we're seeing now on Motzei Shabbos is representing Shabbos being Rosh Chodesh. So that would be the confusion if we lit after both nights. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Why don't we do the following? V'la'avid ben Amalei ben Achaser. So the Gemara says, well, let's back it up. Let's say that they did light after the night of the 30th or after the night of the 31st, whichever one they were Mekadesh. I, v'chi mikla Rosh Chodesh, Be'er of Shabbos. Now, on the occasion where the 30th day falls out on a Friday, so lo le'aved klal. So now, can we do the following? Can't it be that if the 30th day falls out on a Friday, so and we lit both on a chaser and on a malay, so why don't we do the following? Let's say Basin was Mekadesh the 30th, and let's just simply do the following. Don't light any fires. In other words, obviously on Friday night you can't. And on Motzei Shabbos we won't as well. And then won't the Gullus now understand that if it was Shabbos that was Rosh Chodesh, they would have lit. Aye, but now that it's, now that it was Friday, so there's no fire, right? Isn't that good? Isn't that a good method of communication? So the Gemara says, V'kevin de lo avdina Motzei Shabbos, v'avdina malei me'idia de dechaserhu. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a good method of communication. Now, people are still going to get confused. Why? Because Amri, hi Malehu. Because people will say the following. Really, it was a Malay. V'haidelo Avdei, and the fact that they didn't light fires on Motzei Shabbos, is Nusei, who is the Isnase? It just happens to be that, look, something must have went wrong. In other words, maybe an Ones occurred. And that's why they didn't light the fires on Motzei Shabbos. So the Gemara says, okay, fine. So the Gemara just ruled out the lighting the fires on both after a Malay or after a Chaser, or and after a Chaser. Okay, so that's not, it just, we don't have a good method of communicating which day was Rosh Chodesh, again, because of the occasion in which the 30th falls out on a Friday. So the Gemara says, but I still am wondering. In other words, so we're only going to be lighting fires after one of the possibilities, either a Chaser or a Malay. Now, we already know which one they chose. They chose the Chaser, not the Malay. The Gemara now wants to know, why not just light after a Malay and not after a Chaser? So the Gemara says, V'lav de Amalei v'lo le'avid Chaser, klal. So why not do it that way? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why not. So Amar Rabbi Mishum Bitul Malacha La'am Shnei Yamim. Because then what's going to result in is in Bitul Malacha. Now, Rashi explains like this. Rashi says that we're talking here about Rosh Hashanah. So what do we know? So we now know that Rosh Hashanah could be one of 2 days of Elul. I could either be the 30th day of Elul or the 31st day of Elul. Now, again, we've gone over this numerous times in our Masechta. Historically, it was the vast majority of the time, it fell out on the 30th day, not on the 31st day. Okay, but good. But in a day, in a time when we use the fires to communicate, so now it was great. Meaning, if Basin was Mekadesh the 30th day, as Rosh Chodesh, which over here doesn't just mean Rosh Chodesh, it means Rosh Hashanah. So now, what would you do on Motzei Rosh Hashanah? So what you would do on Motzei Rosh Hashanah is you would light the fire. And now everybody would know that the 30th day was in fact Rosh Hashanah. Remember, in the Gullus they would be observing it anyway. But now they would know for sure. And now what would you do now for the next day? The next day would be the second day of Tishrei. Good. And they wouldn't be observing that day also as Rosh Hashanah. That is if they were lighting after a Chaser. But what if they were lighting only after a Malay? So now in the Gullus, so now you're stuck. Because you would be observing Rosh Hashanah on day 30 because you don't know. And again, the majority of the time anyway, the 30th was Rosh Hashanah. So, and then if they only lit the fires after the second, after the Malay, so the Bnei Bava would now have to be observing the second day also as Rosh Hashanah because they have no new information. And so now it could be that the 31st day is in fact also Rosh Hashanah. And now that's 2 days in which they can't go to work. Okay. So, if possible, so we want the people to be able to go to work on that second day. That's why the Chaser is a better system, because what it allows is the Bnei Bavel to know that the first day was in fact Rosh Hashanah, if in fact it was, which most of the time it was, and that allows them to go to work the next day. Good. That's why it's a preferred system. That is Rashi's understanding of our Gemara. Toso says that it was unnecessary of Rashi to limit his comments to Rosh Hashanah. Toso says, you know, it's true by every Rosh Chodesh. So once upon a time, there was a minhag that people didn't work on Rosh Chodesh. Now, I know there's a classic minhag that's described numerous times about women not working on Rosh Chodesh. But Toso says, actually, the minhag was that people didn't work on Rosh Chodesh. And for that, he cites the Gemara Megillah, which, God willing, we're going to get to shortly enough. And the Gemara Megillah describes how on Rosh Chodesh, you know, how many aliyahs there are in Shul? Well, right, this has been consistent now throughout, and that is there are four aliyahs on Rosh Chodesh. Do you know when there's also four aliyahs? Chol HaMoed. Chol HaMoed, you should be taking off. Rosh Chodesh, you should be taking off, right? That's the Tosos right over here, right? Second Tosos on the Amud. And so Tosos describes that, says, so the method of lighting fires after the first night is much better. Why? Because there used to be a minhag where people took off work on Rosh Chodesh, and if they only lit after the Malay, not the Chaser, so now that's 2 days in which they're going to be taking off. Okay, every Rosh Chodesh. And then Tosos does comment that nowadays the minhag is that women don't do malach on Rosh Chodesh. Okay, right. I know it's popularly discussed how women don't do malach on Rosh Chodesh. Meanwhile, right, most of the women do in fact do malach on Rosh Chodesh. Okay, anyway. Right, I certainly do not see the minhag having actually taken off. But anyway, okay. So it kind of takes us to the end of this discussion, and then from here going forward until really the Mishnah and the next Amud. So the Gemara is going to give us a lot of details regarding the wood that was used. In other words, I know it's a defunct system, but nevertheless, the Mishnah already described some more detail regarding the system of lighting the fires from one mountaintop to another mountaintop. So now we talked about the cedar wood. Okay, so the Gemara is going to treat us to a lot of information regarding cedar wood. How many types of cedar are there? There are four. Erez, Katrom, Eit, Shemen, Uvarosh. And then the Gemara goes and gives us more detail. Katrom, Amar, Rav, Adra. So Rav says that it's Adra. Okay, see Rashi for more details over here. Debei Rebbe, Shila, Amre, Mavliga. Vamrile, Zugumish. Okay, right. If you were living in Bavel and you knew Aramaic really well, so all this would be really helpful to you. And unfortunately, to us, it's not that helpful. Upliga derava baravuna dama rava baravuna may be rav asar mine rosin mein. So the Gemara now has a debate in terms of whether there are four types of cedar or whether there are 10 types of cedar. The Gemara has a mesora according to Bei Rav, according to the Shiva Rav, that there are 10 different types of cedar. How do I know that? Shenemar. A pasuk in Yishayahu, a tembet midbar erushita v'hadas ve'eit shemen, ishim barava b'rosh tidar v'tashur yachdav. And now, after quoting the pasuk in Yishayahu, the Gemara goes on to explain. And I'm just going to read because, again, these are just definitions that are not that helpful to us, or I should say better, not that helpful to me. Erez is araza, shita is terinisa, hadas is asa. Asa, by the way, is hadas, meaning, okay, good. I'll pause on that one because that one we're familiar with. Eit Shemen is a farsima, and Varosh is Barta, and Tidur is Shaga, and Tashur is Shorvina. Now, if you've been counting, and I have, so that's seven. And the Gemara then goes on to tell us, but thank you for counting, Hani Shiva Havu, so that's seven. Now, remember, the Mesor is that there are 10 different types of cedar. So, Kiyasa Ravdimi, Amra, Usif, Aleim, Alunim, Almunim, Almugim. Okay, good. So, the additional ones are the three that we just mentioned. And Alunim is Butme, and Almunim is Belute, and Almugim is Kesisa. Okay, now it happens to be that I'll pause on this last one, Amugim, is Kesisa, that's coral, right? Rashi describes that as coral. Right, it grows on the ocean bed and it's picked and it's coral. Okay, good. Igadamre, and you'll see, the Gemara is going to spend a little bit more time on the coral. Igadamre, now in a slightly different version, is Arunim, and Amugim is Arunim, and Arunim is Dulve, Amugim is Kesisa. Okay, fine. Various versions in terms of what they are. What the additional three are. Okay, pasuk in Yishayahu, another pasuk in Yishayahu, v'tziyadir lo yavirenu, or lo yavrenu. Okay, there is going to be a river that emerges from Yerushalayim. Okay, the Gemara spends a number of times throughout Shas describing this river, right? Bimher b'yamein, we're going to have the building of the third base of Mikdash, and a small little river is going to be flowing out from this base of Mikdash. It's going to start off really narrow, And then as it moves away from Yerushalayim, it's going to get greater and greater to the point where it's going to be this raging river. Even this great boat can't go across it. Okay, that's what the Navi prophesizes. Okay. So, Amarav, Zur Barani Gadola. So, the Tsi Adir, this great ship. So, what is it? So, Rav has a Mesora. And his Mesora is Barani Gadola. It's a big ship. But the Gemara actually gives us more detail. So, Hechi Avdei. Now, this big ship over here, first of all, why are we describing it right now? What's its connection to whatever we're discussing? So, the answer is coral. In other words, they use big ships to mine coral from the ocean bed. And so so how exactly is it done? So the Gemara actually is going to give us details. Okay, I highly recommend it if you have not done it. If you have not done so here, there are plenty of opportunity here in Florida to go see the coral. Right, it's all over the place. Okay, it's beautiful. Anyway, so hey chiavdu. So maisi shits off a gavra betreisa yarchai. So again, a lot of details over here. So 6,000 workers over the course of 12 months. The Amri La. Or in another version, it's 12,000 workers over 6 months. And v'tayin elechala. So now what they would do is the following. So they would bring the ship out to where the coral is, and then they would weigh the ship down. How would they weigh the ship down? They would put a lot of sand on the ship. And now the ship would actually sink to the ground. Now the coral is not that, the coral bed is not that far down below the surface of the water. And good. Ad deshachna v'nachis. I'm sorry, Adashachna. Now the ship is in the ground, sunk into the ground. V'nachas bar more, and then they would have divers go out there, right? Rashi describes actual divers. And v'katar atuna dekitna, bekesisa. And now what they would do is that they would tie up the coral to the boat. Okay, so they one side of the rope was tied to the coral, and the other one was to the boat. V'katar lahu b'sfinasa. By the other side of the rope was tied to the boat. V'nat lechala. And now, just talk about ingenuity. Just, it's great, great ingenuity. Now what they would do is that they would take the sand shovel the sand from the boat into the water. And that, of course, would lighten the boat. And now you would have the force of the boat and the force of the water lifting up. And now, because the coral was tied and it was taut, so now the coral would be uprooted from the ground. So v'shadul avrai v'kama demidlei akra. So now that's exactly what happened. The coral would be uprooted. Umasi umachlif. Now in terms of the exchange, meaning how valuable is this coral? Because that's a lot of effort to go ahead and to mine the coral. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why they did that. Because it was really valuable. Alchad train b'kaspa. So one coral gets you 2 silver, I guess per weight, right? Per pound or whatever the case is. So that's a significant exchange rate. And so coral was extraordinarily valuable. And so a lot of effort went into mining it. And then, as if we didn't already get enough detail, some more detail to come. Talas Parvasa Havyan, there were 3 ports. Tarte Bay Armai, 2 were run by the Armenians. Vechada de Bay Parsai, 1 was run by the Persians. De Bay Armai, Maskan Kisisa, the Armenians. So they would be the ones selling coral. And de Bay Parsai, Maskan Marganisa. The Persians would be selling pearls. Mikre Parvasa de Mashman Hig. You'll forgive my pronunciation. I'm sure it was terrible. But anyway, the port of the Persians that was selling the pearls, so that was called the kingdom's port. Okay. I'm Rav Yochanan Koshit Veshita Shanatlu Nachrim Yerushalayim. So when the non-Jews came into Yerushalayim in order to destroy and plunder, and probably Rav Yochanan is describing the Romans. So, said HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Hachzir An La. So it's all going to get replaced by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So everything that was exploited and taken during Korban Beis HaMikdash, so it's going to be replaced. Shenemar, Etein B'Midbar Ereshita. So over here, we go back to the Pasuk in Yeshaya that we quoted above. So the Midbar over here, that's a reference to the Beis HaMikdash, Yerushalayim. Vein Midbar Ele Yerushalayim Shenemar Tziyam Midbar Haisa. Okay. V'amr Rav Yochanan Kol Anlo Meitorah V'Einam Alamda Doma LaHadas B'Midbar. So 2 versions of Rav Yochanan. Anyone who teaches Torah, sorry, who learns Torah but doesn't teach it, so it's like a hadas in the midbar, right? No one's benefiting from it. Now, Igadarma, in another version of that memra, called Alomi Torah Malamda, if you actually learn Torah and teach it, but Makom Shein Tamidei Chachamim, in a place where there are not that many Tamidei Chachamim, Domal Hadas B'Midbar Dechaviv. So now you're like a hadas in the midbar, but with a positive twist, and that is, you know, right? It's really, right? Everyone's really going to like it. Nothing's growing over there, and and now you have something that finally smells good, everyone will really appreciate it. The Gemara goes back to the plundering of Yerushalayim. So, oylem lo avdi kochavim she'in lahem takana. So, as far as the avdi kochavim are concerned, again, right, Rav Yochanan's probably describing the Romans and what's gonna come around to them. So, shenem or tachas and nechoshes avizahav. Right, everything's gonna get replaced. So, for nechoshes now, we're gonna get gold. And tachas abrazel, avi kesef. And for the iron, we're gonna get silver. Vitachas aitzim, and nechoshes. For the wood, we're gonna get nechoshes. Vitachas avanim, barzel. Okay, so for every resource that was taken, so it's going to get replaced, but not only replaced, but replaced and upgraded. Okay, so everything's replaceable. However, certain things which are not replaceable. Tachas Rabbi Akiva v'chaverav my mevian. However, for the fact that they took Rabbi Akiva, right, they slaughtered him. So now, is that going to be replaceable? No. And so for that, Akash Baruch Hu is now saying to the Goyim, okay, for that, there's nothing you could do. So v'aleim huamer v'nikisa damam lo nikesi. Okay, and for that, Akash Baruch Hu is not going to forgive because that's simply irreplaceable. Umeayin ayu masiyam v'suos umi base built in, my base built in. Okay, so the Mishnah described the mountaintops in which the fires are lit, and so the Gemara over here is going to give us a little bit of help in terms of identification. So amarav, as we now turn to the Amud Beis, zu biram. Okay. So built in is Biram. Again, helpful for some, not helpful for others, I understand. My Gola, I'm Rav Yosef Zu Pumbedisa. Oh, okay, good. So you saw in the Mishnah, every time I described the diaspora, I said Pumbedisa, it's because the Gemara does so. That when the Mishnah says the word Gola, it specifically refers to Pumbedisa. Right? I'm not sure why, meaning there are multiple communities out there in Bavel. So the right Surah, Naharda, the Pumbedisa, Machsa Mechasi. Okay, well, in other words, we know a whole bunch of them. So why specifically are we referring to Pumbedisa? I'm sure there's a reason why. I don't know. So, but as Mike Medur Seish. Now, we said that Pumbedisa was lit ablaze. What does that mean? So the Gemara says like this. So, Tana Kol Echa V'Echa Notal Avuka B'Yadav Olu L'Rosh Gago. Okay, so when Pumbedisa sees the fire on that fifth mountaintop, so what they would do is they themselves would now run to the rooftops and they themselves would light fire. So, like, if you had, like, right, if you had a drone and you were looking at Pumbedisa from, you know, I know it's anachronistic. So, and you looked at Pumbedisa from, you know, from a bird's eye view, so what you would see is that basically it looks like Pumbedisa is lit ablaze. But it's just basically everyone in Pumbedisa responding to the fact that they got the message, and now how exciting. In other words, and they're lighting the fires not only to show that they received the message, but I guess it also showed an excitement about Rosh Chodesh. Okay. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. Rabbi Shimon ben Lazar Omer, Af Charim V'Kiar V'Geder V'Chavro Seha. Okay, so here in the Braisa, so we're going to be giving a different list of mountaintops. Three, not five. And now what are we describing over here? So, Igedar Me'Bini Bini Havakaime. So, now, in one way to understand the Braisa is that these were actually intermediate mountains. In other words, the Mishnah gave us five mountaintops, and over here in this Braisa, the three supplemental, so that's in between the five. Okay, it works out well. In other words, so between five, you can fit in three. Okay, fine. Anyway, that's one possibility. Igadamre, the Gemara says, or, well, actually, the truth of the matter is it'd be four. Okay, anyway. Igadamre, lahachisa, de'eretz Yisrael, havakaime. So, mar dechashiv haigisa. Or it could very well be that it's just a whole different route altogether. In other words, it was just simply going in a different direction in order to communicate with a different region. That's another possibility. I'm Rav Yochanan main call achas v'achas shmona parsaos. Rav Yochanan now another comment on our Mishnah. So what kind of distance are we talking about between the mountainous regions that are mentioned in our Mishnah? So eight parsaos between each one of them. Okay, so that means to say that you had good visibility from one mountaintop to another mountaintop at a distance of eight parsaos. So kama havaluhu. So the Gemara says, okay, so five mountaintops, eight parsaos distance between them. So the total distance between one mountaintop and the fifth mountaintop, so that's four intervals, four times eight. Okay, this is higher math today. it's not so bad. So Tilsim Vitartin, so that's now a total of 32 parsaos. Okay, 32 parsaos. Now, as I mentioned, my crack research in terms of going from Yerushalayim to Pumbedisa, So it was 999 kilometers. Okay. So 32 parsos is a short cry from the distance. The Gemara makes exactly that point. The Gemara says, now it's a much greater distance. So Amar Abaye, istitume istatim lahu, darche. So the Gemara says that there were shorter pathways, but they were blocked up. Okay. Okay, good. I don't fully, right. I'm admitting I don't fully understand. First of all, I don't know the geography anywhere well enough to understand how there could be a shortcut. Meaning, I understand shortcuts, but still, that doesn't seem like these shortcuts would really close the gap in terms of what we see versus what the Gemara is describing over here. Okay, it's fine, right? I don't have to. In other words, as far as the geography is concerned, okay, I don't fully understand. But the idea, however, that the shortcuts were filled in. So the Gemara says there are a number of psukim that describe that. And you look at the hemshech of the pasuk, and you can see the Bach even quotes it. So I'm not going to go through it right now. But anyway, but there are a number of psukim that speak to this idea that the shorter paths were closed up. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Mehacha Dichsiv Nisivosai Ava pasuk in Eicha in the third perek, where again the pathways were distorted, were disrupted. Okay, so the shorter path to get from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, so they were closed up for whatever reason. We're not really given much detail. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the end of really a long tangent of the Gemara in terms of we described in the Mishnah, right in the today's daf. I gave a description of the fires being lit from one mountaintop to another mountaintop, and the Gemara in today's daf really goes and gives a lot of detail on a system which the Mishnah admits that it's no longer a system that's used, but as long as it once upon a time it was a system. So we spent a lot of time talking about the mountaintops, identifying the mountaintops. We talked a lot today about cedar because the cedar wood was used. We talked about the various types of cedar that was used. Okay, a lot of details. Anyway, next Mishnah. Chatzar Gedolah Haisa B'Yerushalayim. There was this courtyard in Yerushalayim. Ubeis Ya'azek Haisa Nikres. Okay, the name of the courtyard is Beit Yazik. Ulasham Kolaidim Miskansim. And that's where all the witnesses would congregate. So how many witnesses would come in and testify about the new moon? We only need two, but we encourage as many to come. Right? And now in the Mishnah, we're talking here about the encouragement. Like, please come. I know we only need two, but please come. And you know, psychologically speaking, it makes a lot of sense because once the people know that you only need two, so what happens when you and I see the new moon? Somebody else will take care of it. Okay, that's human nature. Basic human nature, right? You want a fancy psychology term? It's diffusion of responsibility. Okay, but but we could just simply call it basic human nature. Somebody else will take care of it, not me. So basically what we have to do is that we have to induce people now to come to Yerushalayim. So how do you get people to come? So this is, nothing's changed in the last 2,000 years, and that is food. Okay, it's the best. Okay, you want people to come? Kiddush. Okay. So Ubezin Botkin Osam Sham. And that's where the bedikas were done. The people were interrogated. But interrogation is a strong word. In other words, right, it's just what did you see? Right? Can you describe the moon? In tomorrow's daf, we're gonna have a lot of details regarding the description of the moon. So Vesuudas Gedol Sosim Lahem, and they would have a Suuda Gedola Kiddush. Right? Please come, please tell us that you saw the new moon. And you're going to be rewarded with a seuda. So b'shul shi regim lavo. Okay, and it would encourage them to come. B'rishona lo yuzazim misham kol hayom. Now, let's say it was a Shabbos and they had to be mechal Shabbos. So let's go back to our days of Erevin, and let's remind each other what we all know. What happens when you leave tchum? Okay, so under normal circumstances, you're not allowed to. Okay, and if you leave tchum, so now your leaving of tchum in of itself is an iser. Okay, let's assume it's an issur de rabbanan. Fine. So, but it's an issur to leave Tchum, and once you do so, so that's it. You are now locked. Meaning that once you leave your Tchum, so you can't walk beyond Dalet Amos. Okay. Now, if it happens to be that if you left Tchum, whether volitionally or against your will, it doesn't matter. So if you leave Tchum, so you only have Dalet Amos, and furthermore, if you happen to be in a enclosed area, so you can walk within the entire enclosed area. Okay, good. So that takes us back to our days of Erevin. So over here now, these people are leaving their homes. They are allowed slash encouraged to go to this chatzir in Yerushalayim in order to testify. Remember, on Shabbos, you are mechal Shabbos as an aid. You are mechal Shabbos in order to go. You did have to leave Tchum. So now you find yourself in this chatzir. So now for the remainder of Shabbos, you're stuck in this chatzir. Okay. And that's what the Mishnah is describing. So lo hayu zazu misham kol hayom. Okay. Now, in terms of encouragement, so this is not encouraging. Meaning, oh, so let's get this straight. So I'm now going to go to Yerushalayim in order to testify about the new moon, but I had to leave my tchum in order to do so. Oh, so I'm going to be stuck in that chatzir for the balance of Shabbos? I got this better idea. Somebody else will testify. Not me. Oh, good. So, hitkin Rabbi Gamliel, hazakin. So Rabbi Gamliel made a takana. This should sound familiar because we described this already in Erevin, also in detail. It's the same takana. Just we described in Erevin, we're describing it over here in Rosh Hashanah, here in the second parak of Rosh Hashanah. And that is Rabbi Gamliel says that if you left your tchum, but for a good reason, for a correct reason, like over here, like Eidos HaChodesh. So now what you're afforded is a brand new tchum. So now you are not just limited to the chatzer, to this chatzer in Yerushalayim, but basically Yerushalayim now is your new abode. It's your new makam shvisa. You're given 2,000 amos beyond Yerushalayim. So v'lo elu bevad ela af chachma habal eileid, a midwife who's going to be delivering a baby, v'habal eitzel min hadleika, o min agayis, o min anar, o min amapoles, or some first responder who has to leave his tchum in order to save somebody's life. So the takanas Rabbi Gamliel is that if you're leaving your tchum, but for a good reason, for a positive purpose, like Eidos HaChodesh, like for being a first responder to save somebody's life, so you're afforded now a brand new tchum, even though normally that doesn't happen. Meaning, going into Shabbos, you're only given one tchum. But nevertheless, the takanas Rabbi Gamliel is that you're afforded now a new tchum. Okay, the Gemara's discussion over here, really straightforward. This chatzir in Yerushalayim, so we described in our Mishnah as Beis Ya'azek. So what's the right nusach of the Mishnah, with it or without an ayin? So Beis Ya'azek Tanan Lishna Malyahu. So is it with an ayin? So that is a positive connotation. Dichsiv, the pasuk says, Vayazke V'yasalkehu. So let us make a clearing. Well, we'll take out all the stones, meaning it's a really nice chatzir. You're going to love it, even though you're stuck there. So the before Takanas Rabbi Gamliel, Oduma Beis Yazek Tanan, or maybe it's no positive spin. In other words, it's described basically as to what it is. Do you know what it is? Incarceration, meaning please come to Yerushalayim to testify about the new moon. Oh, and oh, by the way, it's basically you're incarcerated. Meaning that when you get there on Shabbos, again, this is before Takanas Rabbi Gamliel. When you get there on Shabbos, so you'll be there for the remainder of Shabbos. Incarcerated. And that's what the word yazek, tanan, lishna de tsarahu, kidechsiv, vuhu asur be'azikim. Right? We say it in the Tehillim every morning by the Pesukah de Zimra. So, right? Zikim are basically chains. You're chained up. Amar Rabbi Tashma Sudas Gedos Hayosam Lahem Sham Kadeshu Rigim Lavo. So the Gemara says, well, it sounds like we're trying to put a positive spin on it. Remember the big Kiddush, the lavish Kiddush? So the Gemara says, Dematarte have avdebuhu. So the Gemara says, I don't know, that's not such a wonderful raya. In other words, the lavish Kiddush could just offset the fact that they're incarcerated. Right? Please come to Yerushalayim. Please be incarcerated. Oh, but by the way, at least you're going to eat well. Okay. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the correct way to describe it is with the ayin. It could be without the ayin, and it just simply means you will be incarcerated, but at least you're going to eat well. Okay, good. Adkan. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with the Mishnah, as tomorrow we're going to go through some details in terms of the questions that are asked to the witnesses. Could you please describe the moon? Good. So tomorrow we go back for a little more discussion regarding astronomy. Oh, and tomorrow, by the way, an exciting daf tomorrow. We're going to be talking about whether or not we could draw pictures of the moon, because Rabbi Gamliel did have pictures of the moon. Okay, so is that allowed? I hope it is, because Rabbi Gamliel did it. So anyway, come back tomorrow for more on that. Let's just quickly recap. Today, really straightforward daf in terms of what we covered. So we covered an old system in which they would communicate when Basin was Mekash Rosh Chodesh, whether it was done on the 30th or 31st day, and that information was sent all the way to Gullison and you know, a little over a snap of a finger. In other words, lighting fires from one mountaintop to another mountaintop. We covered a large area of land in doing so, and that was the old system. Unfortunately, the Kusim got involved, and they ruined it for us. I didn't give much detail. Whatever. There was a Rashi that I didn't go through in terms of what motivated them in order to change it. Anyway, the see Rashi back in the Mishnah. Sorry for not going through it inside. Anyway, but that was the so we no longer used it. But despite the fact that we no longer used it, the Mishnah gave us a lot of detail regarding it, and the Gemara in today's daf went through a lot of detail. Most of today's daf was detailing the system, the mountain regions, the wood that was used, the various types of cedar woods that are out there in the world. Okay, ships that were mining coral. Okay, a lot of tangents in today's daf on discussing the system that was no longer used. Then on the Amud Beis today, so we talked about when people were going to Yerushalayim in order to testify that they saw the new moon, and they did so on Shabbos, and they had to leave their tchum in order to do so. So originally, so whatever chaser they landed in Yerushalayim, that was it. Meaning because they left tchum, so now they're stuck. They were only allowed to walk within the confines of that chaser. By the way, another thing I didn't go through this morning, Tosfos is bothered by a really simple question. Why are they limited to the chaser? Meaning the chaser is in Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim has a wall around it. So shouldn't they be allowed to go throughout the entire environs of Yerushalayim? Tosfos asked that question. Tosfos really struggles with that question. Anyway, see Tosfos for that. So the and then the Takanas Rabban Gamliel. And that Rabban Gamliel says that if you left your tchum for a good reason, so therefore you are now afforded the opportunity to establish a new tchum. The Chachamim gave you a new tchum based on the fact that you left Bereshus, you left with permission, not just permission. In other words, you had a positive reason to go. Eidus HaChodesh, being a first responder. So under those circumstances, so you are now afforded a new tchum. That was Takanas Rabban Gamliel.